North Garden resident R.B. Horsley started writing poetry when her 16-year-old son died of cancer.
In the therapist's office. 1. I ask, what can I do with this grief, the enormity of it? It is the Indian Ocean I have never seen, with endless horizon and drowning waves. It is a solar system of airless planets. It is the proverbial hole to China. The cartoon figure digging through stratified igneous to reach the lethal magma. 2. I talk to him weekly now. He does not know what it is to experience his child's death. I struggle to find the words to speak it, but they get caught in my throat, suffocating me, aborting my speech, squeezing it into hot tears that beg to flow. My pose refuses to let them. He suggests I write down the immenseness, bit by bit, little pieces, poetry.
You're a poet. You know, poetry is, you finish that sentence, poetry is.
I'll quote Gregor. Poetry is survival.
Okay. And why do you pick that?
Because for me, it's been the way to transform or work through the grief of the death of my child into manageable pieces. For me, it's the art that I use to work through my grief.
As much as you're comfortable with, tell me about your son.
Oh, I'd love to talk about my son. Yeah. Yeah. My son's name is Kabir Benjamin Hassel, and he was diagnosed with bone cancer when he was 14 years old. And we lived with it for 19 months, and he passed away when he was 16 years old. So we had been through a lot with his cancer, with many chemotherapies, an amputation of his leg. It's a cancer most children survive. Teddy Kennedy's son is one of those, and that was our model, and unfortunately that wasn't our story.
How long ago?
It's been a while now. He passed away in 1997.
14 years.
Almost 14 years, yeah.
I'm sure there was staggering and overwhelming grief when this happened. How did you get from that to poetry?
Kabir's nickname was Kay. And during the last couple of weeks of his life, we had started doing crossword puzzles as a diversion of when you're being treated for cancer. There are so many times that you just have to wait and wait and wait, and you're sitting in waiting rooms. And he picked up crosswords as something he wanted to learn. And after he passed, I started doing crosswords like 6 hours a day. And I thought maybe I could do something better with my time. I had never finished my college degree, and I thought we were as broke as we were ever going to be because I had stopped working, and I didn't have a career. I just had jobs. I had stopped working to take care of Kay. I thought this would be a good time to go back to school, and I went to Piedmont, Virginia Community College and earned my associate's degree and transferred to UVA, and I wanted to learn as much about writing and writers as I could, because what Kay's death taught me is that life is short and you never know what's going to happen. And it always felt like I was a writer, and I wanted to finally get down to it. I was thinking more along the lines of fiction writing or creative nonfiction. And in one of my literature classes, we studied the poetry of Elizabeth Bishop.
Oh.
And, of course, her most famous villanelle, One Art, was read in class, and it really moved me. And I signed up the next semester for a poetry class.
What made poetry suitable?
In poetry, you reach emotions quickly. I mean, in just a few lines or just a page, I can discover something.
About yourself?
About myself, yeah. Yeah.
I put myself in your shoes for a minute. It would be scarily overwhelming to have that much feeling to deal with. Is poetry a way to fragment it and deal with it a little piece at a time?
Yes.
Maybe?
Yes, I think so. I would agree with that. You know, it's almost 14 years after my son's death, and I am still, I don't live in acute grief, but there are still times when a memory will come up that I had forgotten about that will bring me to tears. And the best way for me to work it through is to write it down. Yeah.
Is your poem you brought that sort of as a result of such a moment?
Here's one. Hair. No hair. Standing, my son, trash talks, the Knicks. Runs fervid fingers over his head, stops. Opens his hand, a fistful of blonde, touches his head again, wisps fall, feather-like to the floor. Cisplatin kills fast-growing cells. Hair grows fast. I reach out, snare a lock. I blink back the sting, laugh, grab another strand. He bats my hand. He plucks, I reach, pluck, we play, take turns, breathe. We are completing a jigsaw puzzle backwards.
I've been astonishingly lucky. I haven't had any grief in my life that approaches yours.
Mm-hmm.
But again, trying to imagine it, I would imagine one feels really isolated and alone. And when you were talking about your poetry just now, it sounded as though you were offering a sense of companionship to perhaps other grieving parents.
I hope that, yeah. It's also an effort to, because grief is very isolating, and I can say that acute grief for me was living in a plexiglass ice cube is what it felt like, you know.
Cold.
Very cold, and no one could reach me, and I couldn't reach out. And I think the poetry is an effort to people have an understanding of what the experience is. And also just an effort to remember my son. I don't want to forget him. I mean, I could never forget him, but...
Yes.
You know?
Remember the details of him.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Well, I write more than poems about my son, though too. You know, it's...
I was going to ask you if that was the starting point, mm-hmm. I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Grief poems.
It was a starting, but I didn't only write things about grief when I started writing poetry. I wrote about fond memories of my upbringing and things that happened day to day I would write about. But those poems were the most powerful.
Have you got a poem that's not connected with your son?
Yes.
And could we hear it?
This one's called TV Anchor, Valentine's Day. She smells chocolate. Its essential perfume tantalizes from its display on her desk. Her tongue explores its language, the news a fluff of sweet, luscious, hearty, delicious stories. Sugar lust, not hunger, in her eye. She aches to kiss, to devour the candy, taste its escapist pleasure. Her fingers smooth the foil wrapper. Red fingernail slides under the paper's confluence. The naked candy rests in her hand. Waxy edges melt. creating brown crescents that must be licked with elongated tongue to save red lipstick. She spins to her co-anchor. Pencil line eyebrows rise, imploring. Commercial?
What moment did that come from?
It was actually a neighbor just relating, watching the morning news with the, she said, that woman wanted that chocolate.
I hope she got it. Okay, what happens? When do you know something's a poem?
I think there's different ways that I come into a poem.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's emotion, and I'm just trying to write it out and come to some kind of peace of mind, because that's what it'll do for me. And then sometimes it's an image that I just want to describe. It's like a painting, only with words. I want to, it's just something that caught my eye, and I want to put it down.
You studied poetry. What did you learn? Is there craft to writing poetry that can actually be taught? Or what do you learn in poetry school?
Well, studying other poets teaches you a lot of about poetry. There is craft to poetry. There's also the work to poetry. And I think that's the main thing is sitting myself in the chair to do the work. All the theories and all the, and you know, I've been in many, many workshops where I sit with my peers and we read over each other's poems and talk about them. And so you get 13 opinions about your poem and critiques.
You talked about the discipline to sit in the chair.
Mm-hmm.
What does your discipline feel when you're being disciplined? Mm-hmm. What are you doing?
I write every day, and it's a priority. I don't work full time. I have designed my life to have space to write. So I don't have much money, but I do have time. I work for money 20 hours a week. So the days that I go in for my job, I get up at 5 in the morning to write. And that way I can work with some peace of mind. Otherwise, I'm thinking that I'm not writing and I get really dissatisfied with myself. For me, it's an emotional need to write. My quality of life really plummets when I'm not writing. So, yeah.
So it is both a something you want to do, and it kind of keeps some, doing it keeps some devils at bay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
What does it mean to be read? I mean, why did that become important?
Mm-hmm.
So that perfect strangers, people you don't know personally or haven't met, are reading your poetry?
Mm-hmm.
And that happened with determination in the last year?
Yes. I feel like the process as an artist has been long for me. and I have been, yes, I'm like many artists out there. You know, I have let this thing and that thing, this job, this volunteer opportunity, this child's needs, this husband's needs, this community's needs, go in front of my writing. And none of that has been bad. But this year I said, I am a writer and I need to get down to business. And that's my intention. I went to the book festival this year and listened to a lot of poets. And I got a lot, I didn't read myself, but I got a lot of affirmation for what I was doing. So walking into that community saying, I am here, because I have not been doing it for several years in that way. I got discouraged because there's a lot of rejection in any art that you do, and making submissions, you get rejected a lot. And I think my skin has grown a little thicker, and that I realize it's not personal when you get rejected. It's just the needs of the editor at that time.
Is there one poem that you personally adore that you haven't read?
Yes. This poetry is entitled Obad, and that's a type of mourning poem. It's usually a lover leaving, something like that. Busy day. Sunlight filtered through the elms, splattering a shiny new maroon truck. I was packing, or just doing laundry, to the pitched noise of three children. Everything happened outside. The bed was under the trees, and on it piles of white T-shirts, a stack for each child. Two giggled, claimed theirs, and ran. I turned back a corner of the comforter, exposed lumps of blue and black socks, ribbed cuffs folded over each other, a dark load of your clothes, frayed collars, and faded logos, waiting for you. Impish boy, standing at my elbow, cool forest breeze, take your clothes, please. When I woke up, I forgot you had died.
When did you write that?
I wrote that in 2001. Okay. Yeah.
And you have tears in your eyes?
Yes.
Yes. Me too.
Yeah.
R.B. Horsley, anything you want to say or anything you want to make clear?
I believe that everybody has some art or craft in them that will empower them in their lives. And I think the world would be a really nice, better place if everybody gave time to work at their gifts. I would encourage people. I hear a lot of people say, I write, but I don't write enough, or I want to do this, or I always thought I could be a painter. And I would say, what you feel drawn to do, do it.
R.B. Horsley, thank you so much.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Wild bird, beating in my heart, I cry at you, sing on. The night was so long, but the darkest part was only just before the dawn, just before.
The song Wild Birds from Lorelei's album No Gravity. Laura's from Albemarle County. You'll find a link to R.B. Horsley's newest poem, 9/11/11, on our website, WMRA.org.